Welcome to Health Hats, empowering people as they travel together toward best health. I'm Danny Van Leeuwen, a two-legged, cisgender, old white man of privilege, living in a food oasis who can afford many hats and knows a little bit about a lot of healthcare and a lot about very little. Most people wear hats one at a time, but I wear them all at once. We will listen and learn about what it takes to adjust to life's realities in healthcare's Tower of Babel. Let's make some sense of all of this. Before her auto accident that caused chronic pain and subsequent surgeries, Barbie Engel was no stranger to pain. She was an athlete, a business owner, an event coordinator, and head cheerleading coach at Washington State University's Spirit program. She had many injuries during that time. She also authored the Cheer Tech Coach's Handbook and a six-part DVD series on cheerleading. Barbie now lives with reflex sympathetic dystrophy, migralepsy, a rare condition in which a migraine is followed within an hour by a seizure, endometriosis, inflammation of the uterus, and other pain disorders. After her accident, Barbie felt overtreated, untreated, and mistreated. She took control of her medical management and replaced drug pain solutions with physical pain solutions. She repurposed her media savvy to heal herself and engage with others with the Ken and Barbie reality TV show. She wrote From Wheels to Heels, a chronic pain patient's story of hope, help, and understanding. Remission Possible, yours if you choose to accept it. And Aunt Barbie's Invisible Endless Owie. And she founded the International Pain Foundation. Barbie and I met several years ago online through WeGo Health, then recently in person at the Expo Health Conference in Boston. Meeting Barbie virtually does not prepare you for meeting in person. Buckle up, here we go. I'll break in several times during the interview to explain some medical terms Barbie uses. I couldn't keep up.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi.
It's so great that you could join me today. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for letting me tell a little bit of my story and using some resources and tips and tools for other people. Hopefully will help them to hear what we have to talk about today.
So when you go to a social situation, how do you introduce yourself?
I would say, hi, I'm Barbie. I am from Phoenix, Arizona. I'm the president of the International Pain Foundation. And I also am a best-selling author and a reality TV personality.
You're a reality TV personality. Well, you have to tell us more about that.
I have done multiple reality shows over the years, and I've been in the media over 1,000 times. I lost count how many times I've been in the media, but have had shows specifically built around me and then other shows that I've joined as part of a segment specifically, or most of them are specifically relating to health, but I do some fun things too.
Where were you when you first realized that health was fragile?
Oh, goodness. I had an auto accident. Prior to that accident, I had been through many injuries. I was an athlete. I was a collegiate cheer and dance coach. I had gone through injuries, blew out my knee, all kinds of surgeries, and I was totally fine, and I could always overcome them and get through them.
Yeah,
I developed endometriosis and at 24, and by 26, I had a full hysterectomy and oophorectomy. And I was like, well, I overcame it. I got past it. And then when I was 29, it was 8 seconds that changed my life and showed me that health was fleeting. And to not ever take a moment in life for granted, do what you can do, live the fullest life you can live in whatever moment you're in.
So what was the 8 seconds?
Yes, the 8 seconds was an auto accident. I was sitting in my car waiting to park, and I, in my rearview mirror, saw this van starting to back up. And I put my hand on the horn and I put my other hand on the seat next to me and I twisted my body, and the guy never saw me. He never put his brakes on, and he was probably going 10 to 20 miles an hour, but he never took his off of the gas until after he hit me. I apparently hit my head, got a concussion. They told me I had whiplash. I'd be better in 3 to 4 days. Here I am, all these, that was 2002, September 26, 2002. And all these years later, with over $1 million in medical bills, it triggered a neuro autoimmune disease in my body. And nothing's ever been the same since. And every day is about taking care of me and being the best I can, living the most life I can, whether that is a day in bed vomiting from pain, or it's out speaking at a conference, raising awareness and sharing my story.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty dramatic.
8 seconds changed my life.
Yeah. Wow. You don't have pain, meaning, oh, my knee hurts. You have this whole constellation of stuff that's uncomfortable. Or, you know what I'm saying? You have all these different pains.
Right. Uncomfortable would be a good day.
Okay.
On my worst day, it feels like somebody put lighter fluid on me, caught me on fire, and I can't put it out. But I also, and I lived like that for many, many years. I was in a wheelchair for 7 years.
Okay.
Dystonia.
Dystonia is a movement disorder in which a person's muscles contract uncontrollably. The contraction causes the affected body part to twist involuntarily, resulting in repetitive movements or abnormal postures. Dystonia can affect one muscle, a muscle group, or the entire body. Sounds awful.
How do you manage all
that? I did not start that way, though. It took me 3 years to get a proper diagnosis. I was overtreated, undertreated, and mistreated. And during that 3 years, I would go into each provider's office, and it took 43 providers. And I would say, help me, fix me, I'm in so much pain. And I wasn't doing what I needed to do to be, what I say, the chief of staff of my own medical team. Mm-hmm. I wasn't being a patient advocate. I wasn't being responsible for my own life.
Yeah.
And I was expecting other people to fix me during that 3 year period.
All right.
I would cry. I would say, I'm in pain. And they would say, where does it hurt? And I would say, everywhere. After I got my diagnosis and I learned about it, it made a lot more sense. I also started learning the vocabulary that I needed so that I could get the care that I needed and get access to proper treatments that I needed.
Can you give me an example of some of that vocabulary?
Sure. When you say pain, you need to be able to describe your pain. You need to be able to say it's muscular, joint, it's burning pain, it's joint pain, it's deep pain. Sometimes it feels like electricity's hitting me. Sometimes it's sharp. Sometimes it's stabbing. Sometimes it's searing.
Okay. Being descriptive about location and sensation.
Correct. Okay. And the more adjectives you can give to your providers, the better treatment options they can offer you, because those are key words and magic words to those doctors, and they can help you find better treatments and options. And now I know, like you were saying, I do have a plan, and I know if I have a migraine or if I have shooting, stabbing, electric pain, what to do in those different situations.
And is all that information in your head?
Now it is. But when my pain is at its most severe, I need my caregiver to actually know this information as well. But in the beginning, I kept journals.
Journals, okay.
I would say, this is what happened today. These are the things I did or tried to do. This is what happened as a result of.
Yeah.
And I would keep track morning, noon, and night what my pain levels were based on the pain scales 1 through 10, which I don't like that pain scale. I think that pain scale needs to be totally redone and not be linear. It needs to be more of a wheel or a circle. Mm-hmm. And I'm working on a project that does just that.
Okay.
That can quantify and qualify what pain is and what it means, because we're not taught. As a child, I was taught the doctor knows everything. Well, now I know there's over 7,000 rare diseases, and the doctor doesn't even know all of the non-rare diseases, let alone the rare diseases. So getting right. the link there, you have to be your CEO, you have to be your chief of staff, and you have to be involved so that you are getting the best care and that you don't get stuck in a pattern of care where you've been doing the same treatment for 5 to 10 years, because there's new things coming down the pipeline. And if you're not up on technology and you're not up on the treatment options and medications, you're going to get stuck, and there could be something better for you that could give you more daily life.
What's something that you commonly use that's not pharmaceutical?
Every day I use things that are not pharmaceutical. Most of the treatment options in the beginning that were offered to me were pharmaceutical. Now I use posture apparel. I use an oral orthotic, which I don't have it in right now because it does change my speech a little bit, but it's this little device that my neurodentist, a specialized dentist, makes that lowers brainstem inflammation.
Okay.
So I use that daily so that I don't have to take medications daily.
Uh-huh.
And I use heat therapy. I use aqua therapy or water aerobic type therapies, stretching, massage, virtual reality. I love virtual reality.
Corsets and back braces are examples of posture apparel. I'm not sure what posture apparel Barbara is using. I didn't ask. A neurodentist takes the approach that teeth, muscles, and associated nerves, and the joints are taken into consideration as an interdependent unit. I use a foot ankle orthotic to prevent foot drop. Barbie uses an oral orthotic. People getting braces put in often use an oral orthotic. The brain stem is responsible for vital life functions like breathing, heartbeat, and blood pressure. Inflammation of the brain stem is life-threatening.
How do you use virtual reality?
Well, virtual reality, I use it in my everyday life, but I also use it during infusion therapy.
Oh. And,
I also have a epileptic condition called microlepsy, which is a rare type of epilepsy. And so I have to be careful with my videos that I do watch. So my husband and I create our own videos that are soothing and visually something like going through an aquarium, swimming with the dolphins or the manta ray, you know, things that I know what I'm going to be watching so it doesn't set off a seizure, but are smooth in nature and take me through a moment where I can escape from thinking about the pain or focusing on the pain.
Did you like have an experience where you happened to be looking at dolphins swimming and you felt better, and then you thought, oh my goodness, this helps?
I was on stage, and I used to be on stage all the time, but I had gotten back on stage a couple of years ago, and when I got off of the stage, I had the highest level of endorphins that I've probably ever had in my life, because I took all my other performing for granted. And this time it was getting back to performing.
Yeah.
And I walked off the stage and said, this is the most amazing feeling. And if you could bottle this, you wouldn't need medication for pain.
Okay.
So I started looking for things that could increase my endorphins.
Okay.
Being happy, laughing, soothing myself through virtual reality, putting myself in another world, because you can't just create a stage in your living room. Well, I mean, I guess you could, but it doesn't.
Yes.
Doesn't give you that as being in an environment, which you get with virtual reality, but finding ways to increase my endorphins, which being in that virtual environment has helped.
Wow. How about just the mundane logistics of, there's so much to manage, whether it's appointments or it's treatments or it's just whatever, life. Not only are you dealing with all your medical stuff, but you have a very busy advocacy and other life. So how do you manage all that? Do you use tools to manage that? Or are you a calendar person? Are you a list person?
My superpower is organizing.
Okay. And I like that. Yeah.
I was already organized in life before I got sick. I did, like, I had this time in my life where things went really bad, and I had given up my life to let other people try to make me better instead of being my own advocate. Yeah. So when I got back to organizing and color coding my calendars and scheduling everything, and I mean everything in life you can imagine, and that's one of the reality shows we did was Extreme Time Cheaters, which was...
Extreme what?
Extreme Time Cheaters. And when we signed up for the show, it was actually Savers was the title, but then they wanted it to be more sexy and more appealing to the public and make them think that we were like talking about cheating, and really we were talking about cheating time. Or living more life.
Oh, I love it.
It was a great way to show that if you are a chronic patient, this is some things that could happen to you in your life. And they took it to the extreme in the show and didn't necessarily say the reasons why. Like, I wear flip-flops. They did it for time-saving tools, but I wear flip-flops because shoes actually give me a worse day. They physically make me nauseous and vomit from the pain finding my feet. So I wear flip-flops or no shoes at all because it feels better for me. And they put it into a storyline. But it was a way to also share my advocacy and
right,
also create endorphins being on a reality show.
So as you're going through your day and you have questions for... How do you do that?
I keep lots of lists. And for instance, with my medical providers, I created a one pager. So in between appointments, I will write, when the questions come up, I will write them down or I will text myself a message.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I do have papers all around me and,
and
notes and things that I need to get back to, or I'll put them into my calendar. And the color coding, I mean, even my closet's color coded. It's everything's color coded.
Okay.
And I literally will create that one pager for my provider, and I will mark down all the things that the doctors ask you on your medical visits. Like, they'll say, list all your surgeries. And for 10 years, you're asking me about all my surgeries. I'm not going to write them down every time. But then when you get into an insurance situation, the insurance, if you don't complete the information fully, will say, why is there these discrepancies? I have that one pager and all that vital information is on there, along with the questions to ask the provider at that visit.
Okay.
So that I don't leave without getting the information that I need or discussed.
Yeah. Let's shift from inward looking to outward looking. So you've been talking about being the chief of staff.
Yes.
You've learned to do that. So when you work with people and you do your advocacy work, first of all, how do you gauge where people are at in being their own chief of staff? How do you do, a quick assessment?
I would give them a small task or a small idea and see if they would follow through on it. I had to learn that as an advocate, not everybody wants help. Not everybody needs help. Not everybody wants your particular help. And not to take that as something against me.
Right.
It's just the fact that not everybody's ready for it.
Yeah.
One of my best friends, I have a porta-cath because I have vascular constriction. She has the same condition. And I got mine, and she saw how easy it was for me to improve the care that I was receiving, yet she wasn't ready for something like that.
Okay. So wait a minute, I missed what it was. Sorry.
A porta-cath.
Porta-cath. Yeah, okay, I gotcha.
A porta-cath is a device placed under the skin in the right side of the chest. It is attached to a catheter, a long, thin, flexible tube, that is threaded into a large vein above the right side of the heart called the superior vena cava. As Barbie said, a porta-cath is used to give intravenous fluids, blood transfusions, chemotherapy, and other drugs. It's also used for taking blood samples. Vascular constriction is a narrowing of blood vessels. I don't know for sure, but vascular constriction likely contributes to Barbie's brainstem inflammation, migraines, and epilepsy. None of this is fun.
Like a central line.
I had a period of almost 3 years where they could not do a blood draw. They could not give me medications. I woke up during a surgical procedure because my vascular constriction was so bad. It was horrifying. It was a horrifying experience. But since I got the Portacath placed, I've been able to do my infusion therapy, surgical procedures, testing, blood draws, all of that through there. And she saw me go through this process, and I just gave her and other people the information. Here's my story.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally one day she was ready to do it. And now she's like, I don't know. I just was afraid. I wasn't ready to do.
So what you're doing is you're assessing where people are at by asking them some questions, by describing a scenario and see how they respond.
Yes. And saying, this might not be right for you. Yeah. Don't do it because I did it. Do it when it's right for you. Do it when you're ready. Because, in the beginning, when I first started advocating, I would be upset that somebody wouldn't take my advice.
Right.
You know, like, I'm like literally giving you the key to life.
Yeah, right.
And you don't want it.
Yeah, So we've been in that situation where, my wife has got great ideas, and it's like half the time I'm not interested, and I think, oh man, I'm such an idiot. But whatever.
So, and my caregiver is my husband, and so he would have to, like, he'll say, oh, you have a migraine? Have you done this? Have you done this? Did you do that? Like, he'll remind me and give me reminders, but he's even had to learn that even with me, I want my options, but then I have to be responsible for choosing what I'm comfortable with. And that's what I try to let other people know.
They
learn about their condition, learn about what the options are for them.
Mm-hmm.
Go through the research of that. Don't be afraid to ask for help if you need it. I know people that are afraid to use a tool in their life, technology, or even a cane or a motorized scooter, because they're afraid of what other people are going to think. And I say to them, do what you need to do to live your best life. Because really, don't feel guilt for riding a scooter. You're not taking somebody else's moment in life away. You're being a part of the situation, and you're getting more interaction.
And now a quick break to hear about our sponsor, Abridge. I see many clinicians on a regular basis, way too many. I'm appalled at how little I can remember when I get home. My wife asks me, what did she say? What about this medication? Or that test? I'm happy to remember half of it. To help me remember everything, I downloaded a new smartphone app called Abridge. Now, when I talk to the doctor, I ask if it's okay to record our conversation. Nobody has said no yet. I push a big pink button to record, and after I'm done, the transcript from our audio appears. Not the whole thing, that's too much, but sections around medical keywords like fatigue, pain, tests, exercise, meds. Now when I'm done, I can share my visit with my wife, and she can listen to exactly what the doctor said. Abridge was created by patients, doctors, and caregivers. Check out the app at abridge.com. ABRIDGE.com, or download it on the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Record your health conversations. Let me know how it went.
Do you have kids?
I don't, but I have seven nephews and a niece.
Okay, so if you think about your nephews and niece, mm-hmm. and you're thinking about them being more ready to take charge of their health, how do you or would you think about doing that?
I have a very good example for this.
Okay.
I have So there's 8 total kids in the family.
Okay.
The first 4, I did not interact with them. All their parents knew was, it was, don't touch Aunt Barbie, keep quiet, don't play around Aunt Barbie. They couldn't have fun with Aunt Barbie. So I have virtually no interaction with them, even still to this day, almost 20 years later.
Wow.
With the 4 youngest ones, we actually sat them down and taught them from birth how to interact with me.
Yeah.
To participate with me. Oh, I can play Connect Four. I'm the Connect Four champion. And so we taught them, Aunt Barbie can play, but this is how to do it, so that they know when they're having a bad day, they can stop and say, oh, I need a break.
Yeah.
I need to calm down my senses. And teaching them from youth,
yeah,
really made all the difference in how they help me, but also how they verbalize and help themselves when they have, you know, a stomach ache or a headache or something that a child doesn't necessarily know how to verbalize.
Right.
They have those skills to verbalize it, and they live better lives because of it. So I think the younger you can teach or set the expectation,
yeah, right,
the better off everybody's going to be with their own healthcare.
A quick break to plug myself. See the show notes or my website, www.health-hats.com, and click on blog podcast for more information, to subscribe or contribute. If you like it, share it. Thanks.
What should I be asking you that I'm not asking you?
People need to know that there's hope and help out there. And
hope and help.
Hope and help.
Yeah. Yeah.
And 2 things that even the smallest glimmer of hope can get you through the worst situation. I guess where I find my hope, and each person would find theirs in a different place, but I've realized what my purpose is in life, and knowing and living and acting towards my purpose increases my hope.
Mm-hmm.
And asking for help is
asking. Yeah.
Like you just said, what am I not asking?
Yeah.
It's coming up with the vocabulary to ask for help, which takes practice and patience.
Yeah, it really does. You know, putting it in a different light, we had a son who was sick and he ended up dying of melanoma. And one of the things that was very interesting was early on, it was really difficult. Like, people are lovely. They want to help. And we had no idea what to say. And we sort of had to practice. With Mike, we would have to practice, okay, here's a menu of things that would be really helpful. And think about like 3 things that's a range of things, like not just food or not just, you know, the Marx Brothers movie. Could you do this errand? But like a range of things, because people.
You have to think biopsychosocial.
Yeah.
And maybe even spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is missing from your life in those areas that other people could, it could be something that means the world to you and gives you a better life.
Yeah.
A better moment. And time changes when you have a chronic illness.
That's, oh yeah.
The way that time, I mean, time goes from unlimited to moments.
Yes.
When someone says, what can I do to help? Or when you're specifically asking somebody for help. If they say, sorry, I can't really do that. Well, could you do this?
Yeah.
Just because they had to say no in the moment didn't mean that there was something against you. It wasn't right. Personal. That may not be their expertise, or they may not be able to provide you that resource, but they could do something else.
Yeah. You know, when my mom was dying, people would say, what can I do? And she said, you want to sit here for 5 minutes and hold my hand? And you know, who can't do that? It's great. I have a grandson who lives upstairs. He's 11. For Christmas, he gave me a coupon book, which is Walks with Him. And he's known, like, since he was young, that I'm trying to get my steps.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so he could be like buried in his video game or whatever screen. And I'll say, you know, you want to take a walk with me? And he will put it down and go, yes, I can help you get your steps. Even though I never said anything about steps, he's got, you know, and then when he wanted to think of a gift for me, it's like this coupon book to, you know, five coupons to take a walk with him, which is like, oh my God, you know, it's beautiful.
It is. That's amazing. And it's, that's the empathy and the understanding that you're instilling in him. You're planting a seed that when he needs someone to go take steps with him, he'll better be able to ask for it and recall it and know what to do in a situation. It grows into a tree. And that's exactly what I mean by we need to refocus in how we talk to children about health and different aspects and what all health means, posture and drinking water. Are you drinking enough water? Are you drinking enough water?
Oh, yeah.
Most people are not drinking enough water.
Oh, I think it's just, I love that 50% of what ails me, if I just drink some water, I feel so much better. And I think, oh my God, there's no side effects. It doesn't cost me anything. Water.
Yep. I even put an app on my phone for drinking water. So I was like, I drink plenty of water. And I do drink plenty of water, but it was how I was drinking the water. And you every time you drink the water, you put it in. Well, I don't like drinking water. I just know that I need water. So I will down 8 to 16 ounces in a less than a minute.
Yeah, that's not the same.
And it's not the same. And my app said, great job on your water intake. You need to slow way, way, way down.
Oh, wow.
Do this over time because your body's like, it's got water. And now it doesn't have water.
Right.
And it's got water. And it that's not what your body needs water, but it needs it over a period of time. And so I use that app to help train me to better spread out the amount of water I was getting, which was more, it said I was in the top 100% of people that water themselves.
I got to see that on your resume now, right?
Compared to people that water themselves. I actually like screenshotted it and posted on social media. I was like, it says I'm in the top 100. Like I'm in the 100. Wow. Like,
oh, Barbie, that's a riot.
Water.
All right. One more question. Do you want to ask me anything?
Do you have a medical condition? Because I know you're health hats, so you wear a lot of hats and you take it.
Yeah, I have multiple sclerosis, secondary progressive multiple sclerosis. Yeah.
Okay. And you're able to walk. So have you found something for yourself that has like stopped the lesions from forming or helped you that maybe Sharon could help other people?
I have secondary progressive multiple sclerosis, and it's progressing very slowly. And I attribute that to a couple of things. One is the infusions that I get. My mobility is probably my most visible and dramatic effect of multiple sclerosis. You know, so I've gone from no cane to one cane to two canes, and now I'm a two cane and electric wheelchair guy. But I have my 3,500 minimum steps a day. I have a trike that I ride.
Ooh.
I believe strongly that I gotta, you know, use it. And I play saxophone. And that really helps my, besides it helps my brain and my spirit. Oh. It helps my my lungs and my dexterity because it's a baritone saxophone. It's a big horn.
Yeah, definitely. I can see how that would help with bringing oxygen into your body.
Yeah.
That's helpful.
Oh, yeah. Taking deep breaths. And again, the dexterity because it affects my intercostals, you know, my chest muscles. It affects my hands. And really, I feel like I've really held off the progression from that. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Well, Barbie, thank you for taking the time. I really appreciate it. And thank you so much. And I'm glad we got the chance to actually meet after our virtual relationship.
Absolutely.
It's a little different when you meet in person.
The most common comment I get when I meet people in person is, "You're so short."
You tell them it's your flip-flops.
I'm like, I'm 5 feet. I'm well proportioned. So in photos, I look 6 feet tall.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I'm 5 feet. So
okay.
That's the
I won't hold that against you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
Thanks.
All right. Take care.
Oh man, I'm breathless. Barbie has always been a dynamo. Think cheerleading, public speaking, writing, videos, color coding, everything. I particularly appreciate that Barbie harnessed her inner dynamo, endorphins, turning that engine into solutions to manage her pain and grease her life frictions. Her transformation from her 8-second life-changing accident and feeling overtreated, undertreated, and mistreated to reality TV, hope and help, virtual reality. Let me take a breath. What's the lesson from Barbie besides go, go, go? A repeating thread in the tapestry of chronic illness, disability, and pain management. Take control, be the CEO, and drink water. Don't gulp it, sip it.
Follow my blog, podcasts, and resources through my website. See you around the block.